T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's 5 a.m. Atlanta. Time to get your day started with John and Hugh.
Hugh Douglas.
Good googly moogly.
A three-time pro bowler and John Fricke.
You got serious butthurt.
A man who's watched the Pro Bowl at least 3 times.
Boom shakalaka.
John, a man who covered the Atlanta Chiefs inaugural season.
And Hugh, who just keeps it real.
I'm good. I got pants on.
Let's get your day started, Atlanta. This is John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And a pleasant good morning to you and yours, and welcome to the morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game for a Monday, the 13th day of July 2020. I'm not John Fricke. I'm Will Pelagic, Willie P in the building here with you, but Hugh Douglas is still alongside. Good morning, Hugh. How are you? How was your weekend?
Oh, it was awesome. Willie P, what's going on, man? How you doing? What you doing this weekend?
I'm good, bro. A little time at the pool. Some disappointment with Atlanta sports. I went to the pool. I kept my social distance. I've got a new move at the pool now. I disinfect the chair now in order to make sure that the person's
so
sitting
butt,
before that
so
it doesn't have a Rona.
So you got it for your butt cheeks won't get COVID. I got
yes,
you.
Yes. Making sure that my butt cheeks are fine without the COVID and still wear the mask and everything until I get outside and get away from everybody. It's all good. Or it's funny. That's how we start on a Monday. Well, I mean, again, here's the funny. The butt cheeks don't get COVID, but Atlanta United on Saturday looked like some butt, if you know what I mean, unfortunately.
Well, you know what? You know what's funny to me, and I know people, well, it's that going into this, you know, talking to Jason Longshore and talking to Mike Conte, they kind of expected it to be a little bit of a lull for Atlanta United, and it was kind of what we expected. You know, especially playing against your nemesis, the Red Bulls. You know, we are the Red Bulls. What's that? The Tampa Bay team. We're kind of them in a sense because they haven't beaten them in the regular season. Beat them to get the championship. So that's kind of what it was. And then you look at how fast they scored. You know, like it was funny, Willie P, because we were texting back and forth. And before that, before the match actually started, they had on the first match for Atlanta United, the first
Nashville
match of the season against Nashville. So going in there, having that on, and then for them to make the transition, I walked out of the room and I came back and it was already 1-0, New York Red Bulls. And I was like, wow. You know, and so then I had to sit down because I'm like, man, this got off to a much quicker start than I anticipated. So, yeah. It was almost like everything that everybody said it was potentially could be against the New York Red Bulls because of the style of play that they have. So it was a little tough, you know, knowing that how important this game was and knowing what you were walking into. Yeah, it was a little tough to see that.
Yeah, the pressure offensive front that the Red Bulls play, their particular shape has always given the five stripes fits, and we'll get into it in great detail coming up here on the morning show with John and Hugh. And, you know, it obviously makes the next two games of the group a lot more vital. You play Thursday against FC Cincinnati. We actually will serve as the lead-in for that game with an 8:30 a.m. pregame and a 9 o'clock kickoff from the Wild World of Sports in Orlando.
Oh, wow.
And then on the 21st, about a week from tomorrow, they will play that final game against the Columbus Crew, which becomes a lot more vital than I think we thought it was going to be. I think, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that you expected to steamroll through New York, but I do think, Hugh, that many believe that, hey, if you just get a draw and you're able to somewhat hold serve, split the points, then you can get a little momentum going into Cincinnati. But I know that they probably felt very good about themselves by the end of the match, but it just kind of, you know, the way that it started, it just left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths because of the fact that you just had so much trouble getting out of your own end because of that Red Bull pressure. It was just an unfortunate result.
Yeah. And now, you know, you talk about that game Wednesday night. It's not a must-win, but it's something where you have to get a positive result. You know, you start talking about the different scenarios and getting out of this group match play, and you got to get a W in that. It's not a must-win, but you have to get this game. You have to get it.
We will talk a little bit more about our Atlanta United thoughts and reactions coming up about 15 minutes time. We'll also talk later on this morning with Mike Conti, as we do every Monday here on the morning show. We get to see the closest thing we get to baseball tonight, Hugh. The Braves have their first televised intra-squad scrimmage. They had a couple of, I guess you could call them, simulated games on their YouTube channel last week that were shot from what might have been outer space, but it really was inside Truist Park. They basically zoomed out the high home camera, and you could watch it, but they're actually going to do a 90-minute telecast tonight on Fox Sports Southeast at 7 o'clock, so we'll at least get to see some baseball in action. And you know, I don't know about you. I'm still kind of, you know, I want to see them on the field, you know, in an actual game. So this will be a nice little taste. But, you know, wake me a week from Friday when they're actually playing real games, when they're actually up in New York, right?
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't I read somewhere where Cole Hamels was having a little bit of a shoulder situation?
He's got triceps tendonitis. Again, I feel like we bought a very nice classic car and nothing works on it. Like, he's a lemon. The alternator not working, we fix the alternator. Then the starter's not working, gotta fix the starter. Like, come on, man.
I'm still holding out hope for Cole Hamels. You know, big fan of his when he was in Philadelphia, obviously.
Sure.
You know, when they won the World Series. I was there for that moment. And you know, being a former athlete, you know, you're trying to recapture those glory days. But boy, I tell you, with King Felix deciding, opting out not to play, and the way that he was looking, and how Cole Hamels started the season, and now it looks like he's not going to be ready to go. I'm a little nervous because, you know, these games are crucial.
Oh yeah.
I don't have to tell you that. I mean, these games are crucial, and it's crucial to get off to a fast start. And to have that happen at this time, it's a little unnerving. No question about that. It's a little unnerving.
A cross-sport corollary for Cole Hamels, he's not what Vince Carter was to the NBA, but he can be what Vince Carter was to the Hawks for this pitching staff. And in talking last week when I was filling it on afternoons with the new Fox Sports Braves reporter Kelly Kroll, she said that Cole Hamels has really had an effect on this pitching staff, including Max Fried. You know, both those guys are Southern California guys, so they've kind of built a kinship there. And you kind of brought him in. I know Andy Bunker likes to throw around this phrase, like, you brought him in kind of to be the team dad, if you will, when it comes to this pitching rotation. But
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, team daddy.
You also want him to pitch too, though. Like, it's one thing to be a great mentor, but you don't need an 18 million dollar pitching coach. You know what I mean?
No, right? and you need him to bring you something to the table. Not saying that he can't, because I still got faith in Cole Hamels that he can bring something to the table. But man, it's you know, when you talk about tendonitis and things like that, man, you need him to go. You're gonna need him to go soon enough. And to hear that, it's a little disheartening as a fan. A little disheartening.
And I also think too, like, this is putting a window into, I guess, something we really haven't talked about a lot. People were always worried about the effects of the coronavirus on athletes and on the sports world, but it's not like that's the only thing that could happen as far as an injury or something that keeps a guy off the field. Like, you're still going to have injuries. And I think, too, you might have a higher proliferation of injuries because of the fact that these guys have not had a normal training regimen.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing, man. We're trying to ramp back up the sports, and we're trying to get this done. But at the same time, we are in a position where, you know, it's still all these other intangibles that go into it. You know what I mean? Like you said, yeah, like the tendonitis and things of that nature. Still got to deal with that still. And by ramping back up like this and trying to get everything going when your body is not accustomed to doing it this way, you open yourself up for all kinds of problems. That's why they're trying to take it slow, because they know that.
Are you feeling any better about sports coming back? Because I know last week I had a tough time with all the ration of bad news, especially in the world of college football. Like, I was just, I kept on getting, like, beaten and battered to the point where, like, Friday night, we were doing our little Dukes and Bell tailgate at home thing, and I made my nice little tri-tip roast, and it looked fantastic on Twitter and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But after that, I took my phone, I threw it in a drawer. I'm like, I can't get any more of this bad news, man. Like, I put
were
on
you
a
talking
movie
about
I,
all the news where you know, like, certain things happened, like all
yes
the, like it was
Big
one,
12 Big, yeah. Big 12 goes, and then the Pac 12 goes, and the NFLPA are fighting like baseball owners and players. It's like, dude, man, I'm throwing on a movie, I'm pouring myself some Jameson, and you know, it's a wrap.
I don't you know what's funny, I got a few phone calls, because as a matter of fact, there are some Eagle fans where I think it's today or tomorrow where they were given an ultimatum. They have to figure out what they're going to do with their season tickets and if they're going to purchase them or not. Yeah, yeah. If I'm telling the story correctly, they're given an ultimatum whether or not you're going to get your tickets this year, and they're trying, and they were asking me what should they do, and I was like, man, that's a tough one, because if you opt in, you had to pay the full ticket price regardless of what's going on. And they asked me, do you think they're going to play football? I think that football season is going to happen. Now, what that looks like, I don't know. And they asked me, should they buy their tickets? And I was like, you know what? I don't feel comfortable making that decision for you. I just don't. You know, I know if it was me, you know, if they're telling me that there's a good chance that I'm not going to get 8 games in my package, then I'm not paying full price for those. That's just me. But, you know, you're talking about opting out and you know, somebody else get your tickets and somebody sitting in your seats or whatever. That's a real conundrum that you have. So, you know, I think that we are going to have sports. I don't know what it's going to look like, and I don't know how long it's going to last, but I do think that we're going to have it.
We haven't heard anything official from the Falcons. We've heard some franchises tell their season ticket holders that they're either going to operate at a reduced capacity or without fans or with some restrictions. Are they giving, to your knowledge, the Eagles fan options to, you know, if they opt out, they can still get their same seats next year? Because I know that we've seen that from some teams. I know the Ravens were big on that and a couple others.
I would probably say yes. I'm not for sure. Like I said, I'm not for sure. But I would think so. Knowing Jeffrey Lurie like I do, I would say yes. But, you know, just the mere fact that this fan was very, very concerned about it, I was like, I don't know what to tell you. Because I've never been in that situation. And I don't feel comfortable telling you to do something and then it's not that, you know, telling you that you should get the tickets and then they don't play 8 solid games.
That franchise was in the news for other reasons, which we'll get to in the NFL headlines, and also the potential change of the Washington Redskins nickname, a big news item today. Looks like that name is no more per the Sports Business Journal. We'll get into that a little bit later, but first, the 5 stripes fall to New York Red Bulls. What does it mean for our chances to advance in the MLS's back tournament? It is the morning show, John and Hugh, on a Monday morning. Willie P. in for John. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com.
Their defensive third, Franco Escobar, steps up to press. Red Bulls, though, are able to thread it through down the middle. Here's a breakaway with Guzan off his line. Florian below to the spot. Shot score. Red Bulls in the 4th minute get the first goal of the match, and it is Florian Vallot, who tore his ACL in April of 2019 and missed almost the entire season, giving the Red Bulls the 1-0 lead.
That's how it sounded here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike Conte and Jason Longshore with the call. We'll hear from Mike a little bit later on this morning. I actually was able, Hugh, to get the perfect sync of the Radio.com app with the game broadcast. I know a lot of people who were watching the game broadcast were complaining about the crowd noise.
Yeah, I was one of them.
I didn't get a chance to hear the mix, but was it a bad mix?
Well, it was just a little bit distracting because, like I said, for me, I was in the other room and I had the match on, and you remember I told you they was playing the Nashville match first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were texting back and forth, and that's when I texted. I was like, wait a minute, is the match on? When I walked out. And you were like, yeah. And I was like, hold up, well, what's all that crowd noise? Because I had trained myself, and I was already conditioned not to hear anything in the background. because of, you know, the circumstances under which we under right now. So I was right. already conditioned not to hear any of that. So when I heard it, it was really, really distracting. Because, you know, they tried to sync it up where it sounded like it was actually going with the action. But at the same time, you know, looking into the crowd and looking into the stands and knowing where that it's a practice facility, it was kind of like, come on, man, you're doing too much. Like, I honestly, that's how I honestly felt. I was like, come on, you're just doing too much. I mean, we all know what we're dealing with right now. And for you to do that, it's kind of like, you know, you're kind of telling us a story.
Yeah, they didn't really have any natural sound behind Mike and Jason on the radio broadcast. I was wondering if they were going to get maybe a clean feed thrown their way, but I guess not. I guess that was probably too much to ask for from that perspective. And again, they did a great job. Mike was in a very difficult spot because, you know, Atlanta has those King Kid jerseys where the numbers are kind of difficult to see, and Red Bull's numbers did not look well at all in the lighting that they had down there at Wide World. So he and Jason did a fantastic job trying to identify players. And again, I'm not as passionate about, you know, crowd noise or not crowd noise. I know that on the Premier League games, they've tried it and they've gotten better at it. The problem is, anytime something happens, the reaction noise is usually like it's a delay. Like you'll see someone miss a shot, and then 2 seconds later, it's like you get a gasp. It's like, oh, and so it's almost like a bad video game.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand they're trying to bring the ambiance to it, but I just thought, honestly, that it was, you know, it was not needed. That was my personal opinion. I don't know how a lot of people felt about that, but I felt like it was not needed, you know, because we already know what we're dealing with and everything like that, and I would rather just hear the ambient noise or whatever you want to call it in the background. I would just rather hear that.
You and Joe Patrick can argue about that on Wednesday when we have him on, because he's a staunch crowd noise truther, which I was like, man. I didn't realize you were that way.
I'm a truther. I feel him on that, man. It was just a little different. It was a little different, you know. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the match. I enjoyed the fact that it was back, you know. And Twitter was a buzz, you know. And I saw that Mike Conti tweeted out that you know, we had the highest numbers. We had like a 7 share or something like that for the Atlanta United match. So that was pretty. That was pretty encouraging. You know, it was like here, New York, and we were first. And then it was like New York and a couple other states. But, yeah, that's pretty cool to see. That MLS is back, baby.
A 1-0 loss on Saturday night. We talked about it in the open. The Red Bull shape that they play, that pressing style, it made it very, very difficult for a back third who has no time really playing with each other. You had Miles Robinson, who hadn't played a game competitively in about 8 months. Playing with Fernando Meza for the first time. Franco Escobar also had some trouble in the back. The guy I thought who played really well throughout the game, Hugh, was George Bello. Like, it seemed like he was in on a lot of the through balls that were served from the midfield. He had the one shot where he hit the crossbar in the second half on probably one of their best chances of the entire match. And it's so encouraging to see that guy who has had so many injuries, including the concussion symptoms that kept him out of the beginning of this season, homegrown player. That's a guy, if you want to come out of the match with an encouraging sign, that guy playing well certainly is one of them.
Yeah, no question about that. And you talk about that almost header. Well, not header, but almost off the crossbar hit that he had.
Yeah,
I mean, that was really exciting. That's when you guys were really going crazy about it. Another guy who had a great match the other night was Brad Guzan. You know, you're talking about the Red Bulls had a couple of shots where he saved them. It could have easily been two or three shots that they could have made, and he saved that. So, yeah, he was another guy that was on point. But, you know, just looking at the internet and everything, the thing that I got out of it from watching the match and listening to what other people were saying, they were a little concerned about some of the formations that the Red Bulls the Five Stripes came out in, you know, and what they looked like early on. And I attribute some of that to the fact that, you know, first match back, tough draw. You're probably trying to be a little cute with some of the matchups that you had, something to that effect. But, yeah, I mean, you've kind of – it's not a panic button push, but you got a situation that you have to handle this upcoming week.
You are dealing with, I think, a little bit behind the eight ball, not having Ezequiel Barco in the starting 11, and I think, too, you know, when we found that out, people got really freaked out by the fact that he wasn't in the starting 11, and we found out later it's just because he wasn't really up to to 90 minutes full form fit. So I think because of that, you had to kind of improvise a little bit with the lineup. And so that's why you saw Josetu in there along with Pitti and Manuel Castro. And you really didn't see a lot of ingenuity when it came to their offensive game plan. So that part of it was a little hard to see. Once Barco got in the game, I think Pitti found himself a little bit more comfortable. You were able to see some more sustained runs and shots on goal. You said it about Guzan. That could have easily been a 3-0 or 4-0 scoring line. He made some tremendous saves. The goal that he allowed was not his fault. It was a defensive breakdown, and Florian Vallot just kind of came in there and chipped it past him. So that wasn't necessarily Guzan's fault. He had to come off his line to try and play the ball, and was basically in a lose-lose situation there. And I think, too, Guzan keeping that scoreline at 1-0, I don't know if it'll have any factor in the goal differential because of the fact that Columbus beat Cincinnati 4-0. So I don't know if goal differential is going to come into play from the standpoint at least of trying to win the group or at least get themselves into that 1-2. But it might have an impact if, say, Atlanta were to advance in one of those four third-place finishers because after the disqualification or the withdrawal, I should say, of Nashville, you now have six even groups of four, which means the top two in each group are going to advance, and then the top three third-place finishers are going to advance. So because of that, you did everything possible on your side. And you said it earlier, Cincinnati is not a must-win, but it's about as
must-win as you can get. Yeah, it's about as must-win as you can get without having actual must-win.
Yeah, not only is it a must-win, but that's the, you know, for many people's eyes, the weakest team in this group. Not only do you need to win, but you need to put up some goals.
Yeah, you need to have a solid win, mm-hmm. a beatdown, if you will. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's hard to kind of look at the Five Stripes and see what type of team they are right now because of the Red Bulls, obviously. But yeah, you're gonna definitely be in a situation where you're gonna be looked at to get off to a fast start. Can't have that I guess what you could call a slow start that you had in this match. So you got to get off to a fast start, and you got to jump on the Cincinnati real quick, like a bunch of crickets.
Yeah, I know, and you know, I think there was some real confusing parts of the midfield. I was kind of surprised we didn't see Anton Walks in the 20. They might be trying to get him in as far as Thursday's match. And that's the other part of this, too. Playing three matches in 10 days, Frank DeBoer, I think, has to kind of, you know, divvy up his selections a little bit differently than you normally would in a particular run of play because of the fact that you basically want to not even have guys able to be selected so that they're fresh for the next match. Like, we didn't see Tyler Wolfe in that selection roster either. So because of that, I think you might see him either in this next coming game or later on. But there was a significant midfield breakdowns trying to get themselves off of that Red Bulls press. Mentioned Josetu earlier. You know, I was kind of championing him a lot coming into the season just because of all the highlights that we showed. He had a little bad game. I mean, he gave away some major opportunities, and it was really our first opportunity to see Manuel Castro. And much like George Bello, had his opportunities, but like at the same time, it's like he whiffed on that one from like point blank range, and I'm just like, man, you can't whiff on that one when you're that close to the goal.
And then you know what? Just watching it from my perspective, you know, you had just as many opportunities to score as the Red Bulls had, and you didn't get it done. And I think part of that is because, you know, we all talked about what this was going to look like without Joseph being out there. And how are you going to play? And I think this was the perfect storm for the New York Red Bulls because you're with a team that's trying to figure out how to play without his best striker, and at the same time, you're playing your nemesis that plays a style that you really have a lot of trouble with. So you know it was a perfect storm, and I think that you know even though everybody knew it was coming, they were out there trying to feel their way, and they didn't get it done. The only guy that looked like he was ready to play, like I said, was Goo. Goo was out there doing his thing. So Wednesday is a situation where, like we said, it's not a must win, but it's the closest thing to it that you got, brother, for real.
As we said, Columbus won 4-0. They sit right now currently at the top of the group with goal differential over New York. Cincinnati and Atlanta United play Thursday morning, 9 a.m., and you'll again hear it on.
Oh, I said Wednesday. Yeah, Thursday. My fault. Thursday. Yeah.
No, it's all good. I see, this is the thing. When one of us screws up, I just move on.
Oh, well, that's fine. That's cool, because you know what? Guess what, Will? We're going to screw up quite a bit. Well, I am, you know. Going to have a couple miscues every now and then. You know, players mess up. It happens.
We roll on. 9 a.m. Thursday morning. We will lead right into it with an 8:30 pregame for Mike and Jason, and then they will do their postgame show leading into Andy and Randy for that day's match against FC Cincinnati, a team that we've beaten already, and that should be an encouraging thing, but they have a brand-new manager, so they might look a little different. The personnel is pretty much the same from the one match we had to play at Mercedes-Benz Stadium earlier this season, and that was also the first full game we got to see without Joseph Martinez. They implemented Adam John in that game early. John came in this last game against New York late to kind of play that top nine player, the guy who was up front. I'm wondering if we see him in a similar role there, because, like I said earlier, once you had him in there, he had the header that was right there at the end that went right by the keeper. And you also saw Barco. Like, if you can get Barco a 90-minute stretch, or at least maybe in the first 60, get a couple goals and then take him out, I think that's your easiest route to me, Hugh, for a victory to get yourself back to square.
Yeah, I mean, because you know it's gonna, like what we're talking about, Will, gonna have to have it. Definitely have to have it.
You have to have it, certainly. And again, that Columbus game a week from tomorrow is the one that's the final part of that group. It is the morning show, John and Hugh. Willie P in for John on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Super Freaky coming your way next. A death in the world of the movie industry and some changes possible along the horizon of the National Football League, which we'll get into coming up as we roll along on a Monday morning. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com. 92.9 The Game, morning show, John and Hugh, Willie P in for John. I just saw this news item come across here, Hugh. Apparently Devontae Freeman is cutting ties with his agent, or at least his agent is cutting ties with him. Campbell is terminating the relationship, according to NFL.com. Devontae still unsigned after basically pricing himself out of a market, which I don't even know if there was one for. Is that too harsh? Am I too harsh?
That was a little slap in the face at 5:41 in the morning. That was a slap in the face.
It's okay. It's not quite what I said about Deidrin Sinnott a couple of weeks ago when I said he was the world's most expensive sideline pass.
This
is what happens when you get me with you. Terrible influence.
Oh, but you know what though? The Devontae Freeman story is very intriguing to me, because you know his lawyer, you know, Luke Campbell, Uncle Luke, if you will, was the husband of the wife of the agent, you know, and they came up with Devontae Freeman, and it just kind of makes you wonder. I don't know the ins and outs of this story because you're just dropping it on me like that, but it just kind of makes you wonder what was the motivating force behind him dropping her as an agent. And you know what? Honestly, the first thing that comes to mind is sometimes agents have to be the bearers of bad news. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes they have to keep it with the kids, like to say 100 with you. And maybe she told him something that he wasn't trying to hear, and he felt like, you know, she wasn't. I don't know. But it hopefully, bottom line is, this is what I'm trying to say. Hopefully, Devontae Freeman will get a chance to play in the NFL this season. Because you know, like initially, it just sounds like, you know, that might be kind of tough.
Or instead of my ear, she told him he was old. He's 28. He was set to make up $4 million on a 1-year deal. And again, it looks like, according to Mike Silver of NFL Network, this is coming from the agent, so it wasn't from Devontae. So I think Chris Campbell basically told him, he's like, look, either you want to play, or you know, it's hard to represent somebody when they don't want to play. You know?
Well, if they got a certain number in their mind, and that's not what the market is bearing, right. That's another thing. You know, it that could potentially be holding you back. Man, you know what? Sometimes, man, listen, the toughest thing to do as an athlete is to know when you're done. And, you know, that, like I was always told, when it was my time and it was time for me to move on, transition, if you will. Yep. I was the last one to know. I was the last one to find out. But, you know, my body just didn't respond the way that it used to respond. That's the biggest indicator, is when your body does not respond the way that it used to respond. And you can't do some of the things that you used to do. And it's a tough spot to be in, man. No question about it. It's a real tough spot to be in. But, you know, you have to be realistic about where you are as an athlete. Because, listen, nobody outruns Father Time. I know some people hold him off with the fire of a thousand suns, and they do a great job of doing that. But, man, nobody outruns Father Time.
It wasn't even Father Time. It was just the ability to stay on the field for him, which I found somewhat appalling about, you know, you thought that he had kind of gotten past all his injuries, and it just, after a while, it almost felt like it was, again, I hate making the crowd analogies again, but it just felt like an engine that just didn't have any motor. Didn't have no giddy up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? He hit the scene like gangbusters, you know, put himself in a situation when Tevin Coleman was here to make a lot of money in a short period of time. And, you know, he was the man. And you know what, man? The unfortunate thing about it is for running backs especially.
Right.
But any position, but running backs especially. You know, when you hit that wall or you fall off that cliff, it's fast. It's really fast.
Well, that's funny. You say that about running backs. I think the same thing can be said about quarterbacks because – and granted, it takes a lot longer. But I do think you can go from being an effective quarterback to limp-armed in a hurry, which is why I think a lot of people look at the NFC South the way that they look at it because of, you know, where Brady was last year. I know Brady wants to sit here and say that he didn't do anything and it was all everybody else and it was all, I didn't have receivers, I didn't have this, I didn't have that, I had no offensive line. Guess what? He don't have any offensive line in Tampa either. And as much as people want to talk about Drew Brees not having a decline, I do think, you know, you can never forecast it. Like, it always comes as a surprise. So it's going to happen to one of them, if not both.
You know what the funny thing? You know what the funny thing about Drew Brees, though? I remember stories of his demise about, what, 5 years ago?
Yep.
And they end up going to the playoffs now. They haven't reached the ultimate goal yet. They haven't made it to the Super Bowl. But he's still a viable quarterback in this conference. And that's the one thing about it. I think that the better ones, the good ones, they evolve and they adapt. And they adapt on the fly. And you know, that's what I think about most players that play – at the highest level. And that's one thing that I didn't do. I didn't adapt and evolve as quickly as I needed to in order to play, you know, a few more years. I've seen some guys do it, you know, like Michael Strahan, for instance. When he saw that his game was about to diminish a little bit, Michael Strahan started to pull back his workouts. He dropped that weight, and he became, you know, lighter. And it allowed him to play a few more years. You talk about Drew Brees, when they were talking about his shoulder and everything, he modified his game. And I think that's what most of the good players do. When you're in a situation like that and you know you're not the guy that you used to be, instead of trying to force something that's not going to happen, you just adapt and evolve. And I think both of those guys have done it. I think Tom Brady's going to do the same thing. He might not be the guy that he was in New England, but you know what? He was still a really good quarterback with the numbers that he put up there with that terrible offensive line that he had with New England and those subpar receivers.
It is the morning show with John and Hugh. Willie P. in for John on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on this Monday morning. We'll get you in the morning mashup here in about 13 minutes' time. After you concluded a season when you were playing, did you ever watch the playoffs or did you just check out?
It all depends. Well, if I wasn't in the playoffs, you know I definitely didn't watch them. The one year I remember watching the playoffs, man, because I was this is when the NFL Network was just in its infancy. And I remember doing a couple sideline games, and I did a playoff game. I think it was for the Philadelphia Eagles. And then the next week was the NFC Championship game. Mm. And I decided not to do it because if I could not be on the sideline, it was against the Carolina Panthers. And I could not be on the sideline if the Philadelphia Eagles won that game and went to the Super Bowl. I would have been sick. I'd have been sick as a dog. So I watched the game at home. And that's the only time that I was kind of like, you know, I was torn between rooting for the Eagles and not wanting them to win because I was not a part of it. And that was probably the only playoff game that I actually watched, like the whole playoff series. Now, you know, now I watch playoffs because obviously, right. you know, I'm not, you know, involved
working
with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's about the only time.
The only reason I ask is because I was driving around yesterday, and normally I have my radio on the station here, but I flipped over to my Sirius and happened to catch on the NFL channel, they were replaying the 98 NFC Championship game, Falcons-Vikings, the game where, of course, Morton Anderson hits the field goal in overtime. They win it 30-27, and I think mm-hmm. it was Jeff Hollinger and Jeff Van Note on the call. I was trying to find out from Orin who had the Falcons. I don't know if we had the Falcons maybe at this radio station in 98 or not, but Chris Chandler, Terrence Mathis, Jamal Anderson, and that was our first trip to the Super Bowl for the Falcons. That was, man, you remember, I don't know if you remember the way that all went down. You know, Anderson misses the, Gary Anderson, I should say, misses the 38-yarder and ends up getting a touchdown with 49 seconds remaining. Just a dramatic sequence with those two teams.
No, see, I don't remember that. I mean, but, no, I don't. You know, as a matter of fact, I don't remember that.
Yeah,
I didn't get a chance to see it.
Randall Cunningham was in that game for Minnesota. He was their
quarterback. I remember Randall playing for the Minnesota Vikings because I think we played him in the preseason or something.
Right.
You say what year was this? 98?
98.
Yeah, you know what? Bring it back now because Jamal was playing then. That's when the Dirty
yes.
Birds went to the Super Bowl because my first year. You just may remember, flashback. That's the first year in Philadelphia. And we
That's
came
right.
to Atlanta to play the Falcons. And the game, I remember the game was like 7-9 or something crazy like that. It was a crazy score that year.
17-12, I'm looking at it right now.
It was something. I remember it was something crazy. Because I'm like, dog, that was a hard-fought game. And you know, it was one of those ones where like
I knew
Jamal
if I kept circling
physical.
Around that something would hit with you. I knew I'd get something out of you with that.
No, because I couldn't remember when you said 98, because I was thinking, okay, wait a minute, 98. Because, you know, my mind automatically was thinking of, wait a minute, Matt Ryan. But I'm like, hold up, Matt was too young for all that.
Wait.
And then I got, you know, yeah, then it came to me. Yeah, I got you. I'm with you.
Chris Chandler.
Yeah, Chris Chandler, because I guess a couple years after that, we played them in the playoffs again in Philadelphia. And Michael Vick was on the bench and came
right.
in and made some plays. I'm flashbacks. You know how all these seasons started running together after a while, man.
Someone hits you up at Big Hugh 53. Do you think Favre fell off a cliff as a quarterback? I don't think he ever did. That's the one guy who seemed like it wasn't like he ever fell off a cliff. But the thing is, the interceptions, which were always a problem, it just seemed like they were more magnified with him as an older quarterback.
No, he was just – Brett Favre played with that. What's that, IDGAF? He played
yes.
with that. He played
yes.
with that. And it was hard to tell whenever he was playing bad because mm-hmm. he played that way. Because he just played like he was having fun, man. And he was out there in the backyard just letting it fly, just slinging a rock. That's what he was doing.
I'm not going to lie, only because my father reminds me about it because he was a long-suffering Jet fan. But that year that he played for the Jets might have been the worst year of my life because of the fact that my father would always text me and be like, I can't stand this Brett Favre. I can't stand it. I'm just like, that is not me. I'm out of
Brett
the house.
Favre was he was out there balling for him, though, man.
He was.
Brett Favre was probably the best quarterback the Jets had in a long time.
That's like more of a comment about the Jet quarterbacks than it is.
I mean, but
Brett
I just thought
Favre.
About that though. Brett Favre probably was the best quarterback the Jets had in a long, long, long time. I would have to. The underboss would have to be up to kind of co-sign on that one because he's a Jets fan,
yeah.
diehard Jets yeah, fan. So he would have he to is. Be the one that had to get up and co-sign on that one.
You had was it Foley or Boomer when you were there?
Boomer was there. Bubby Brister.
Oi.
And I think Frank yeah. Wright was there for a year.
Oi, oi, oi. Bad memories.
And Foley, too. Glenn Foley. Yeah, Glenn yeah. Foley was there. Yeah.
It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P and Hugh hanging out in for John. We'll come back. Morning mashup from our pal Orin Romain, including a very bad edition of Charles Barkley's Who He Play For. Next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, radio.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.